Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, November 23rd, 2014. This is episode 1138. Enjoy. This episode of the Tech Guy is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you all of the ingredients to cook fresh, delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. And by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Visa prepaid card when you get a loan. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, episode THX-1138 of the Tech Guy Show. Yes, 1138. That's 1,138 episodes. That's like a ridiculous number. How many? Heather Hummon, phone ranger, is here to answer your phones. How many shows did Dina Dell do? Do you know? He was doing five a week. For how many years? Oh, you were with him for 11 years?
Killing me.
Well,
how many shows did I do?
Well, you were there how many years? 11 years.
Yeah.
So 48 that's
48 weeks.
48. Well, you took 4 weeks off a year, huh?
Yeah.
That's nice.
You need to take more
time. I ought to take more time off. So 48 times 5 is 240. So that's 2,400 shows in 10 years. You know, it's pretty good. You did. In 11 years, 2,640 shows. I'm catching up.
That is funny. I never even thought of that, and now you're blowing my mind.
Blowing your mind.
I lived it, and yet you're blowing my mind.
So I'm punter. It took me 10 years to do 1,138, almost 11.
Right. But,
see, but I only do two a week.
But you're doing 3 hours.
But there are far
more
sick people than there are sick humans than there are people with sick computers.
Hmm.
Not actually far more, sure. Somewhat more. They needed Dean more than they needed me, let's put it that way. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number to call. You'll get that nice person over there on the other side of the glass. Heather Hammond's going to answer the call, groom you for your appearance on national radio. Make sure you're looking sharp and your question is equally sharp. We could talk about anything with a chip in it. Photography. In fact, our digital photographer joins us in an hour and a half to answer questions and talk tech. We could talk about computers, I guess, and the internet. I think we mostly do computers still. I thought by now we'd be off that. Because tablets, smartphones, those have kind of taken over, haven't they? Well, we talk about those too. MP3 players. I stopped talking about MP3 players, and then this week I started talking about them again because I got one of them Pono players, the Neil Young high-def music player. So for a long time, iPods were just, you know, there was nothing to talk about. But now there's something to talk about. But mostly it's smartphones. I'm sitting here looking at like six smartphones, trying to decide what's the best smartphone of the latter half of 2014. And you know what's great? I can't. That's good. That means they're all so good that you can't take any off the stack. I've got the iPhone 6 Plus here. I've got the Droid Turbo, which is Verizon's version of the Moto X. I've also got the Moto X, the Galaxy Note 4 from Samsung, and I just got the new Nexus 6, Google's latest phone. One thing I know for sure, I mean, none of these are smaller than 5 inches. Most of them are nearer to 6 than 5 inches, including the Moto X, which is 5.96 inches. That's giant. Not the Moto X, the Nexus 6. They all sound like they belong in a science fiction novel. Spacecraft names. I've got a Droid Turbo. Well, I've got a Nexus 6. My Moto X can beat both of you. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. Talk about anything on your mind, anything to do with digital technology. 8888-ASK-LEO. I don't know whether it'll be happy or not about the fact that Congress decided this week not to pull back the NSA just a little bit. At stake in the Senate was a bill that would have stopped the mass gathering of phone records. It's funny, the NSA has gone from denying it to fighting a bill against it in Congress. If you don't do it, then why are you worried about that bill? I guess they do it. They gather people's phone records, all of us, all of our phone records, and store them for several years. That's why they're building that giant facility out in Utah, that giant place. It's all about data storage. They say, well, we don't look at them. We just store them. It's like your grandma's basement. There's stuff. There's your action figures and your baseball cards. Nobody's looking at those. They're just stored there. Unless you do something wrong. Then we got you. Well, we were hoping that this all comes from the Patriot Act and from the terror, the legitimate terror that struck us after 9/11. But, it's one thing to be afraid. It's another thing to give up your civil rights, your liberties. And apparently we can't look to Congress to protect our civil liberties. Frankly, the question is, can you trust tech companies to protect your civil liberties? How compliant are they with the government? They have to if the feds come to them. In fact, if the feds come to them with something called a national security letter and say, we want to know everything there is to know about Leo Laporte, but in this national security letter, they could specify, you may not tell him or anyone else that we're doing it. It's secret. And it's approved by a secret court. Yes, just on the face of it doesn't sound good, does it? Secret. Tech companies say they don't like it. In the past, the phone companies especially have been quick to jump on it and say, yeah, whatever you want, sure. Anything, we'll be glad to help. No one wants to be seen as soft on terrorism. I understand that. Not Congress, not the phone company, not Google, Microsoft, or Apple. But it's starting to hurt them. Brazil just turned down a several billion-dollar contract for Boeing airplanes to protest NSA spying. Germany's doing the same. A lot of countries won't do business with U.S. companies anymore. The EU actually is saying Google ought to be broken up. We don't trust them. So what are the companies doing? They're responding. I don't know how willingly. They pretend it's willing. Oh, yeah, we want to protect your privacy now. Because everybody knows now that they weren't. Oh, yeah, no, we're going to do that. And this is driving law enforcement crazy. WhatsApp just announced. You ever use WhatsApp? This is the app that a smartphone app that sold for $22 billion to Facebook. $22 billion to Facebook because it's very widely used all around the world. Less so in the U.S. because people here use text messaging, but that's expensive around the world. So WhatsApp is very popular. They just announced they're going to put in open source strong encryption that not only they can't read, Facebook can't read, WhatsApp can't read your messages, but the government can't. Oh, this makes law enforcement very unhappy. But then the terrorists will use it, and everybody else, because we don't want you snooping on us. We're not all terrorists. We're not all terrorists. Encryption is turned on in the newest Nexus 6 by default. You can turn on encryption in most of your phones. And Apple has beefed up their encryption. Now the United Kingdom, the government, GCHQ, the government spying organization in the United Kingdom, is forcing internet service providers and mobile providers to retain information that links your relatively anonymous internet address with your name for 12 months. This is part of their anti-terrorism and security bill, which would no doubt become a U.S. bill as soon as that passes. The legislation, they asked for companies to retain data about people's online conversation. Now imagine this, your internet service provider or your phone company, retaining everything you do online, conversations, social media activity, your phone calls, all the text of your texts for 12 months. Fortunately, that part was turned down by the British Parliament, but But they did approve the retention of IP addresses and names. That's pretty much all you need. Because at some point along the way, British spies, the American spies, all the spies get all the information. At some point, all they need to do is say, well, who was that address? Because we know everything he did. The ISP says, oh, that was Leo. Ah, gotcha. Wow, what a world. 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO, the number. And Heather Hammond has a full board for us. Did Dean Adele, you know, I keep bringing him up. I'm a little jealous.
What? Why?
Because he's a superstar and retired. Did Dean Adele have a full board like that? How many lines did Dean Adele have?
I think we were the same setup.
We don't want to do more than, we have 6 lines. Now, you may say, well, wait a minute. You're on 200 stations, more than 1 million people listening. If only 0.1% call, 6 lines is not going to be enough. Mm-hmm. But the reason is, once you're on that line, you're going to be on hold for a long time.
Yeah.
If we had 10 lines, it'd be even longer.
Right.
So we just figure you're going to get a busy signal. And then as soon as but the trick is, once I answer a call and I hang up on the person, that's when you should call, because that's when a line is open, right?
Oh, exactly.
Yeah. I've been thinking about this. I was up in the middle of the night. So
and he moved through them much more quickly because he was like, you know.
Dean would move fast. I have a bad habit. I've been told many times by trained radio professionals that I should not spend so much time with these calls, that I should move them. But I feel bad for people because they're suffering. There's true suffering out there. Mm-hmm. Anybody who has to use technology these days is suffering.
Is suffering.
And I want to help.
Yeah, and we were kind of like, hey, Doc, it hurts when I do this. And he'd be like, don't do that.
But I'm click.
See you next. Computers are actually more intricate than the human body.
I feel like, you know, if somebody, you know, has a broken arm, that's one thing. But if they have a broken PC, that's another thing.
You can't
entirely
say, take 2 pills and call me.
No, you've got to help them out.
You would never say, call the Geek Squad.
Who should I see so many wonderful people waiting.
Yeah.
Who should I talk
Becky
to?
Becky actually waited a little bit yesterday, so we want to get to her first today. She's in Mission Viejo.
You're telling me she's literally been on hold for 24 hours.
Yeah, I was like, just stay there. I'll get to you tomorrow.
Becky, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks, Heather. Hi, Becky.
Hello, Leo. Thank you so much for taking my call.
I hope you had food and water during your long
I did. My family took good care of me. They delivered, you know, food and water throughout the night so I could stay on.
That's lovely. That's what it's all about, family.
Absolutely. Well, actually, speaking of my family, I need some advice about a computer for my daughter.
Okay.
She is going away to college next year.
Hey, how exciting.
She wants a laptop. Mm-hmm. We're a divided family. Half of us are Mac, half of us are PC.
Oh, wow.
My daughter is a diehard, and I am diehard Mac users. But there are, of course, budget issues, especially when we start talking laptops.
Yeah.
She desperately wants a Mac laptop, but I've wanted her to look at PCs, but I don't really know for college. My concern is that they're going to be going to online textbooks and things like that. And I want something that's going to last her for the next 4 years.
Well, one thing to do is to call the college, call the bursar and or somebody at the college and say, hey, what do you recommend? Most colleges nowadays, they don't mind. Mm-hmm. But you can find out things like, well, do they have access to printers, for instance? Some colleges, there's a printer. Is she going to stay in a dorm or stay home?
She'll be in a dorm.
Okay. So some dorms have printers in the dorm. My daughter's college, you have to go all the way to the library, and you have to pay per page. So I got her a printer. But much of the time, you don't. Now, they'll probably have Wi-Fi in the dorm. That's the nice thing. Internet access usually is part of the deal. And they probably don't care, although if your daughter's college has an IT group, a support group for the students, nowadays that's, believe it or not, a big part of a college administration is the IT group. You might call them.
My concern was if it goes down, the Macs never go down on us. I've had problems.
Yeah, well, and that's always the issue with the Windows machine is she's going to have to be, you know, a security guru because there's a lot of attacks on Windows machines and she's got to keep it locked down and so forth. I think, you know, at $999, which is the low-end MacBook Air, that's a great student machine.
Do you think that's durable enough?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it's very durable.
In their backpack and all that?
Yeah, they're very durable. They're solid state. There's no moving parts. It's a machined aluminum, which is pretty good. You could bend it if you really tried, but it's not going to bend in the backpack.
Okay.
I would say that in a way, if I'll tell you what they told me when I went to the orientation for my son's college, CU Boulder, a couple of years ago. He's a sophomore now. They said, we recommend, you can get a Windows machine, you can get a Mac machine, you can bring whatever you want. You don't even have to have a computer because we got them in the library, et cetera, et cetera. But if you're going to buy a computer, do not cheap out, they said. They said most companies will make a consumer line and a pro line or a business line. And we recommend that you buy the business line. And if you compare business line on all Windows machines to Apple, you'll see that, in fact, that's what Apple's doing. They make a high-end business computer. They don't make a cheap computer. They don't make a consumer computer. So that's why Apple's look more expensive. But if you compare a good Windows notebook, like, let's say, the Acer S7, that's $1,400, comparable to a MacBook Air. So if you compare, I think you're going to see that Apple isn't as overpriced as it feels. However, I understand you're paying tuition. believe me, I got two kids in college. I know exactly how you feel. So you could get a Windows machine. It sounds like your daughter is going to suffer because of that. She doesn't want Windows.
No, she doesn't.
Yeah. I think the low end aluminum MacBook Air. It's only 11 inches. It's a small screen. Might be worth going. You're near an Apple store. Going over to the Apple store and just comparing the 11 and the 13. But I would compare the two. The 13-inch, which is what I use, has some nice advantages. It's got 12 hours battery life. It goes and goes and goes. It goes all day for her. She can take it to class, take it to the library, and doesn't have to charge it until she gets home at night. It has a nice screen. It's not a Retina display. That's fine because it keeps it fast and inexpensive. And there are no moving parts.
Okay.
So that makes it more durable. I think it's more durable. If you bought a $500 Windows laptop, that's not going to be durable. You should also ask the school for student discounts. Apple's usually only 10%, but it helps.
Yeah, every little bit helps.
Yeah. And what's her major? Does she know? I mean, it's early to know. She's only a high school senior right now, but...
What?
What's her major? What's she going to...
She wants to go into special education.
Okay. So there may be, sometimes there's software that's specific to Windows or Mac, so you should find out. Yeah. Sometimes, not always. I know my sister-in-law teaches speech, and there are some really interesting speech programs. But there actually many of them are on the iPad. And most of them, nowadays, almost anything will work on a Mac or PC.
Yeah. Well, you will make her very happy because she's been lobbying hard.
Yeah, yeah. And, I it kills me because, but for the 13-inch MacBook Air with student discount, and you can get the base model, you don't need to get more, is $949. I think the saving $300 or $400 is probably going to cost you because it's just not going to last as long. And she's not going to be happy. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And Red is next in Los Angeles. Hello, Red.
Hi, Leo. And it's Reb with a B.
Reb.
Yeah.
Hi, Reb.
Sorry. Hey. Well, people talk about how long they've been listening to you. Even before tech TV and all that, weren't you on like a NBC cable thing with Soledad O'Brien?
Yes, I was.
What was that?
I'm surprised you could recognize me because it was called The Site. And when NBC and Microsoft, created this cable channel called MS, that was the Microsoft NBC, NBC rightly thought, oh, Microsoft's going to want a tech show. So we made a tech show called The Site. Soledad O'Brien was the anchor. And I was a virtual reality character because the executives at NBC said, yeah, you got a voice for radio. We're going to put you in a room. Wire you up with sensors. And make you a virtual reality character. So I was a character called Dev.
Yeah, I remember that, but I remember your name.
Later on, they let me on camera a little more. They knew the show was going to be canceled, they said, what the heck?
Yeah. So I want to help my dad get a TV, and I know that there are are images that look like, I've heard you talk about it, like plastic or soap opera effect. And I want to make sure we stay away from that. And I don't know how to, you know, how to, what technology to avoid.
Well, if you're going to get an LCD-based TV, and by the way, sometimes they say LED, that just means it's an LED backlit LCD. All of them are LED nowadays. There are very few fluorescent tube backlit LCDs. But if you're going to get an LCD, it probably will have this as a feature, which, good news, you can turn off on any of them. So the, this is, I can give you the kind of long explanation of why they do this. LCD panels are slower than CRTs were, than plasma is, than OLEDs are. They take about 9 milliseconds, 7 milliseconds to go all the dot on the screen from all the way off to all the way on to all the way off again. That's called response time. Slower response time means sports will look a little blurry, action movies will look a little blurry, you won't, you know, won't be as crisp as you'd like. So the manufacturers added a feature, they have various names for it, but what it is frame interpolation. They add extra frames. So a normal television picture is 60 fields or 30 frames a second. And even if you've got 60p, which most of the time you don't, it's 60 frames a second. What they do is they make it 120 or even worse, 240 frames a second. Now, there's no data for that. There's no picture for that. They're still only getting 30 frames a second. So they interpolate or make up frames in between. And what that does is it makes the picture look crisper, but it also makes it look, as you kind of described it, plastic, or sometimes we call it the soap opera look. It looks more like video than it does like television. And that can, some people don't mind it at all. I think it's artificial, so I don't particularly like it. But in almost every case, you can turn it off. In fact, I don't know of any TV you can't turn it off. So you just want to turn off that 120 hertz stuff. I'm so bad. When I go over to somebody's house and I see this look, I'll secretly go into the menu and turn it off.
Because I think it's annoying.
It's not right. Okay. It's not right. Yeah. Now, we are going to start seeing movies that are shot at, The Hobbit was shot at 48 frames a second. That's double the normal film, 24. And we're going to even see higher frame rate movies. And sometimes people complain that that looks, the hot parts of The Hobbit, if you saw it in a high frame rate theater, look like too real. Somebody said Gandalf's staff looks like he got it at Staffs R Us. It's a plastic resin staff. And it probably is a plastic resin staff, but you never noticed it before because of lighting and the frame rate. And so movies, which have always had kind of this magical quality because their frame rate is so slow, are going to be at a higher frame rate. That makes them more realistic. But that just means people have to light them differently and think about it differently. It's just like high def. Okay, that's so not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about on these TVs is really faking it. And yeah, I can't give you the name because every TV manufacturer has their own name for it. And so I had to, like Samsung, I can't remember what Samsung, sometimes they call it like Smooth Stream or something. They have crazy names for it.
But yeah, you'll find it. I know what to look for anyway.
Yeah, so you'll see somewhere you'll have a choice between 30, 60, 120, or maybe even 240. And you just disable that.
Quick Mac question. Yeah. I have tried NAS. Network servers, and none of them seem to support, that I found or found in reviews, support spotlight searches. And
right.
I want to know if you or the chat room knows of any NAS boxes that work with directly support Sherlock searches.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sometimes that's just, I have to look up why it doesn't. Most of the time when you use a network-attached storage, you share it via a Microsoft technology called SMB. And I would bet that the Mac can't do a spotlight onto an SMB mount. But if you could turn on AFP, the Apple File Protocol, it might be able to. So that's the first thing to do, is look if a NAS will support that. I know Netgear has just released updated ReadyNASs that have specifically Mac support.
So, okay, Netgear. All right,
Netgear. The Netgear ReadyNAS. I haven't tried them yet. They're sending me one, but as soon as I get it, I'll tell you. I've used those for years, and I'm sure somebody in the chat room will tell me other ones that do that. But right now, at least as far as I know, ReadyGear does. And you might try turning on AFP, the Apple File Protocol.
Okay, that's great. I appreciate it, Leo.
All right. Take care. My pleasure. Mike B. in the chat room says, Samsung calls that frame interpolation, the 120 frames per second, Auto Motion Plus. What does it even mean, Auto Motion Plus. And if you know of other network attached storage devices that will use that will allow you to use Spotlight to search them, you know, in theory, if you've mounted a drive, even if it's on the network on your desktop, I would think Spotlight would just search it. But maybe Apple turns that off just because network drives are slower than local hard drives. They don't want to tie up your machine indexing a slow hard drive. Eliezer in Florence, South Carolina. Hey, Eliezer. Welcome.
Hi. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm fine. I got a question about one of your sponsors. I'm actually happy with it, RocksBN.
Yeah.
Is there a way you can configure it by programs individually? Like, I don't mind, you know, like, I don't need ProXPN to watch YouTube, but if I'm going to surf the web,
right,
like banking and stuff like that, I mean, can I configure a browser with one, I mean, with the ProXPN settings and, you know, another one without?
Yeah, and I understand why you want to do that, because a VPN, which is what we're talking about, slows things down, because instead of going from your computer straight to Yahoo.com or Netflix.com, it goes through an encrypted tunnel to the VPN server and then to Netflix.com, and that can slow you down because you're making an extra hop. Exactly. So it's true if you're watching streaming video or listening to streaming audio. There are a lot of things. If you're doing Skype, you might not want to use a VPN. ProXPN does offer Windows and Mac desktop software. I know that. I don't think it allows you to say this program but not this program.
Okay.
But it does make it easier to turn it off and on.
Oh, yeah. I know that. Just I'm gonna, you know, yeah. I would like to be, like, be pre-configured for certain uses. That's it.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's download that software anyway and see how it works. I know it does some things kind of nicely, but I don't know if you can actually say, hey, Skype shouldn't use a VPN, but the browser should. That would be a nice feature. It may be technically difficult. It's funny. I did a search on why I can't use Spotlight in a network-attached storage, and it brought us to the Tech Guy Lab site, where, thanks to the callers, there's some good solutions. This was a question that I answered on episode 1072. So thank you. Go to techguylabs.com for the answer. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888, ask Leo. Can you give me, so Christopher in our studio today is, we have a nice studio audience, thank you for being here everybody, is a custom AV installer, and he has on his iPhone a list of, how long is that list, Christopher? Like, looked like 10 things you have, 10 things you have to, he says automatically turns off on all Samsung TVs, and one of them, of course, is that Auto Motion Plus, I'm sure, yeah. Yeah, the dynamic contrast. You don't want it to. Do you? Are you a calibrator too? Do you? You're doing calibration. Yeah, yeah. We talked about that a little bit yesterday with Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy, and it is. I'll tell you, he's calibrated my TVs, and it made such a difference. I have a Panasonic Viera Plasma, which is a very nice TV, and he calibrated that. But the Samsung OLED I have did not. He said did not need much calibration. It was, you know, if you put it, you take it out of showroom mode. And he said, it's pretty good. But it really, I don't think an OLED needs it, but maybe it does. It also had this Auto Motion Plus. And he left it on just a little bit. A little bit on. I don't know what that means. And then I tried turning it off and on, and it does make it a little bit more plasticky. But he said there's something going on with OLEDs that they need. There's some, he used a term, and I don't remember what it was, but they need a little help in the frame rate area. Gareth in Granada Hills, California.
Hey, Leo, how are you?
Gareth. I'm great. How are you?
I'm a man in mourning.
Oh, I'm sorry. What happened?
Well, a couple of days ago, my house got broke into, and one of the big things that was taken was my camera backpack with about $2,000 worth of stuff.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I have nightmares about that.
Yeah.
It's easy. They're small. It's easy to steal. You just grab the backpack and go.
There you go. So I've been through all the stages. I've been through anger, grief. Now I'm in the position of seeing this as an opportunity.
Acceptance.
So I know that I've got a budget of $2,000.
Yeah. So you did have insurance. That's good.
Well, yes, but the insurance deductible is about $2,000, so it doesn't cover it.
Oh, well. Is that all they took, is just the camera bag?
They took a little bit of my wife's jewelry, but that was, you know, paled in comparison.
The easy to pocket stuff.
Right.
What did you have in that camera bag?
Well, I had a Canon EOS 70D.
Very nice. Very nice camera.
Yeah, with the grip, all the attachments, and it all totaled up to about $2,000.
Any of the lenses left behind?
Nope, nothing.
So you can really start from scratch at this point.
Yeah, so what I'm looking at, as you know, the 70D was a cropped sensor, APS-C.
Right, right.
And what I've been looking at is an EOS 60, which is full frame.
Yes, and very nice camera.
Right. If I look at that and I buy two lenses, that would probably take me up to about $2,000. But I wouldn't be able to get any of the attachments, like the battery grip, you know, any of the filters, those kind of things. So do you think that I'd be getting much better quality pictures with the 60D than the 70D?
Oh, yeah. Once you go full frame, you never go back. What we're talking about is the sensor size, which is essentially the film in a digital camera. And on a point-and-shoot camera, it's about the size of your pinky fingernail. It's very small. And as these sensors get bigger and bigger, they gather more light. It's not about the number of pixels. It's really about the amount of light that they can gather. For instance, I have a Sony A7S, which is a full frame. Full frame means the same size as a 35-millimeter negative. Roughly. And the A7S is a full frame 12 megapixels, so it's not very many megapixels. But as a result, it's super in low light. So I think a full frame, you will notice. You'll notice in the depth of field, for instance, one of the things that distinguishes professional portraits from amateur portraits, and you may not notice it until I tell you this, is that the person is in crisp, clear focus, but the background is kind of blurry. They call it bokeh. And the quality of the bokeh is something photographers often talk about. And a full-frame Canon is going to give you amazing bokeh. And people will immediately say, you just got to be a better photographer. Now, you're not. But that full-frame sensor makes a big, big difference, especially in portraiture where you have something in the foreground and something in the background.
Yeah, it'd be kind of good if I could have the two cameras side by side and take pictures and the bokeh.
Oh, you'll notice. You'll notice.
Yeah.
You'll notice. Trust me, it's a big difference. And I think if you can go full frame, it's always a great idea to go full frame. But you'll never go back. The other reason you want to go full frame is from now on, all the lenses you buy will be for full frame sensor. That means those lenses are a good investment going forward. As the bodies improve, as the quality improves, you can upgrade those and keep the glass. Glass is forever.
Right, right. Any other options apart from the 60?
Well, I'm going mirrorless, but if you don't mind the size of the Canons,
right.
I was a 5D shooter. I still have my 5D. Love it. And for some things, it really is better. But I like the compactness of a mirrorless system, and I use the Sony A7s now because they are very compact. But they're also budget busters.
Right.
Although the new A7 Mark II, which is coming out in the next month or so, is going to be, I think, list price $1,600, so you could get that in a lens. But I think you're a Canon shooter. You like Canon.
I
think the 60 is absolutely the way to go. It's an amazing camera.
All right. Well, there you go. Thank you.
In many respects, better than the 5D, although a lot less expensive. Yeah. If you're a digital photographer, photographers say it's as annoying to them when somebody says, "Wow, you must have a really good camera," as it would be to a writer if you said, "Wow, you must have a really good typewriter. Boy, that novel is so good. What typewriter did you use?" That's silly, right? Photographers get a little bit annoyed, and you could take a great picture. In fact, I just saw a really interesting article. I'll see if I can find it. I'll put it in the show notes. A photographer compared shots from his iPhone 6 to shots from his big Canon 5D, and he dared people. Actually, I think it was a Canon EOS T5i. He dared people to tell the difference. And, certainly at a smaller scale, I couldn't tell the difference. Couldn't tell the difference. They both looked amazing. So I think it is the case that the photographer is what really matters. However, if you're a good photographer, it's nice to have good tools. You know, the hammer doesn't build the house, but if you're going to build a house with a hammer, you should have a good one. And I think those are really excellent. I think you'd be very, very happy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Bruce is in Beaumont, California. Hi, Bruce.
Leo, how are you today?
I am well. How are you, sir?
I'm so excited to get a hold of you before Black Friday because I'm upgrading my wife's cell phone.
Ah.
But she broke her Sony CyberShot, dropped it, broke it. And so she wants one phone that takes great pictures. And I'm platform agnostic. I don't care.
Yeah, I think that while there are some things you can do with a CyberShot like Zoom, the camera phones on most of the modern cameras are really, the cameras are remarkable. I'll give you the three best. Everybody agrees, and I feel very strongly that the most pleasing photographs, you could argue about technical issues, but the most pleasing photographs come from the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus. Just gorgeous. Just gorgeous. The colors are great. They're just pleasing to the eye. Maybe a more accurate camera, certainly an excellent camera. The Galaxy Note 4 is very good. I would say in many ways better than the iPhone. And finally, the Lumias, the Windows phone cameras, particularly the 1520, those three are the best camera phones out there. So pick your operating system, then pick your phone. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, 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 here we are at the top of the next hour, and it's time for me to eat some lovely food created by Blue Apron. Have I told you about Blue Apron? I did tell you about Blue Apron. Did I tell you about it? I think they're new on the radio show. Blue Apron is a great solution for people who love to cook and love to eat. They want great food, but they don't have the time to go shopping. Blue Apron does the shopping for you and delivers a delicious meal to your door. All the ingredients, a recipe card. The best, by the way, the ingredients are super good. They're fresh, delicious, just the right amount for the recipe. It's so cool. It's better than ordering out. It's better than eating out. And if you love to cook, it's a really great solution. We've been using Blue Apron for a month or two now, and it's so cool. Here's how it works. For $9.99 a person per meal, 10 bucks, a lot less than eating out, a lot less than takeout, Blue Apron will send you a refrigerated box with exactly the right high-quality ingredients in exactly the right proportions. Plus, you get the recipe. I loved this because it introduced me to new recipes I'd never tried before and new ingredients I'd never seen before. And these ingredients are local. They come from local farms, so you get produce that's in season at the peak of freshness. Meals are 500 to 700 calories a serving, so it's very light, very healthy, very delicious. You can, of course, supplement it if you want, but I have to say, I've been really happy, and the recipes are so good. Things like hake with melted leek and potatoes, Moroccan spiced roasted Romanesco cauliflower with dried cranberries and toasted almonds. We did a congee. I'd never had congee before. What is it, Korean? It was so good. Congee and pork. It's just fabulous. Blue Apron. So here's the deal. I want you to try it. And so I've got your first two meals free when you go to blueapron.com/twit. I got to put in my email address here so I can show you the recipes. There you go. Chicken schnitzel. Love that. Shrimp and mustard green lang. I don't even know what that is. With jasmine rice. You'll learn great recipes. By the recipe cards come on coated stock. They're beautiful. Lots of pictures. How to. So it's something you can actually collect and create. There's a recipe card. Your own little cookbook. Twit fans get two meals free if you go to blueapron.com/twit. blueapron.com/twit. It's really nicely done. I love this. And yeah, all the packaging is recyclable. Don't worry about that. It's very convenient. blueapron.com/twit. If you love to cook but don't have the time to shop, it's a great solution. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, Hour 2 of the Tech Guy Show, episode 1138. This show will be in THX. That's just a little Lucas in joke there. His first movie was THX 1138. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5555. 36, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. I was just, it's probably illegal to even touch this I was just showing one of our visitors. He has an iPhone 6, and I said, Mark, take a look at this and compare it to your iPhone 6. This is not an iPhone 6, but it looks just like it, even down to the Apple logo on the back. Although I'm told that when the fellow who bought this for me, or didn't buy it for me, but he bought it and brought it to me and showed it to me, I was told that it doesn't say iPhone when you buy it. You have to go across the street, and there's a guy who then stencils it on, no charge, because he's got to deal with the guy who sells it. What's interesting is it looks just like an iPhone. It's even got the same wallpaper as an iPhone. So, you know, if as you look at it, it says slide to unlock. It feels like it's an iPhone. Enter passcode. I don't know what the... he forgot to tell me what the passcode is. But it's not an iPhone, and it's not running iOS. It's running Android. And Android skinned to look just like iOS. So it looks, and the only way you would know maybe that it's Android is when you press the App Store, you get the Android App Store, not the Apple App Store. And these are very popular in China because they cost literally one-tenth as much as an iPhone 6 Plus. The iPhone 6 Plus is about $1,100 in Beijing. This is $111 in Beijing. And it's a status symbol. Even $111 is a lot of money, and only the richest few can afford $1,100 for a phone. So if you're carrying this around, you go to a meeting and you sit down at the table and you put this on the table, it carries a lot of status. And nobody's going to examine it closely enough to know that it's not an iPhone. You might know, but nobody else is going to know. The clones coming out of China are really amazing. He showed me an iPad clone. That even uses the same part as an iPad, the same screen as an iPad. Looked identical. Now, I don't think they're trying to, maybe they are trying to get these in the U.S. to sell as counterfeit, but you should probably be careful because you really don't, you don't want this, and you certainly don't want to pay $800 for this, so you should be aware of it. But I think it's primarily for the Chinese market, and I know the iPad clone was. Although Nicholas, the fellow who brought me this, said, watch out because these Chinese companies are able to make these iPad clones very cheaply. They're running Android. They don't even pretend to be an iPad. But he says he expects this year, 2015, the next year, I guess, we'll see many of these flooding the United States market. And effectively, Android tablets, and we've already seen them, but they'll look exactly like an iPad in form for $100 and less. So this, and you know, I think it's the case that these expensive phones that we're buying, well, for one thing, you don't see the price because the cell company, excuse me, I'm going to move my, I squeak a little now. I'm getting old. the cell phone companies subsidize these, so you usually don't pay more than $200 for your new phone. But if you bought it unsubsidized, $700, not unusual, $800, not unusual for a high-end smartphone, they don't cost that much to make. These are very high margin items. An iPhone might cost, you see people estimate maybe $150, $200 at most. The rest is profit. 8888 ask, so be careful. Make sure when you're buying it, you buy it from a reputable dealer, not some guy on the street. And I think the easiest way to tell this isn't an iPhone 6 is it doesn't weigh as much. That, and if you can, launch the Play Store. That'll tell you something, too. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Richard is on the line from Hacienda Heights, our next caller. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
How's it going?
It's going good. How are you?
The Dr. Dean.
The Dr. Dean of technology.
Listen, I have a Verizon modem that's giving me trouble. I'm sure that that's what it is. I have to be able to hook up an Ethernet cable to the modem as opposed to using Wi-Fi only. And I had a guy out here yesterday. He got it to go doing basically what I've done in the past, which is release, renew, and reinstall, flush the DNS. And I'm at my wit's end on this because I got up this morning, and sure enough, it's not working. I can't seem to get this to work, and I thought, I'll call you.
Yeah. The routers are kind of cheap computers, really, if you think about them. Wi-Fi routers are just cheap computers with radio transmitters and receivers. They've become a commodity product, And, you know, when you get it from Verizon or Comcast or AT&T, you're getting an even more commoditized product because these companies squeeze the companies that make these, and they're junky.
Yeah.
So,
cheap-looking unit, frankly.
Yeah. Well, it is. So you have a couple of choices. I presume you've rebooted it by unplugging it.
Oh, I've done everything.
Yeah. That usually is the best way. Release and renew is a software way to reassign IP addresses, and maybe that'll work, maybe not. A couple of things you could do. I would call Verizon and say, this thing doesn't work, and can you give me a new one?
I've done that. He gave me a new one yesterday, and it's still not working. I'm putting new computers on it even, you know.
So he did. So when the tech was there, he did replace the unit, but it failed quickly.
No, it worked fine, but I tried my best to make it fail, and it failed overnight, like it always does. Like something's hijacking it, but
I'm going to presume that it's not the modem part that's failing, but the router part that's failing.
Okay,
but I may be wrong on that. You can tell the diagnostics will let you know if you look at the front lights. You can see there's probably four or five lights on there, and one of them says I'm talking to the cable company. Another one says I've got internet access. If those are lighting up properly, then it's probably the modem is probably fine. And what I would suggest is just don't use the router. Get your own better quality router and then connect that with Ethernet to your modem. Just use the thing, the junky thing. Was it Action Tech? I'm trying to remember what Verizon uses. Get the junky thing.
I see. So you want me to get a router to connect to the modem that he replaced yesterday.
Just use the modem part.
Then I can hook up my Ethernet cable.
Yeah. So, and what you'll have to do is tell the Verizon router not to route. Put it in what we call bridging mode. And that will then tell the router, look, I just want you to be a modem. Don't do any Wi-Fi stuff. Don't do any NAT, network address translation. That's what a router does.
Right.
Don't be a router. Just be a modem. I'm going to provide my own router. Verizon may even have instructions for doing this. It's not an unusual thing to want to do because the routers that the companies, the ISPs give you are usually junky. You only need the modem.
Router that you recommend?
Well, I always get Apple routers. They're more expensive, but I find that they're just reliable and robust. However, they're like $180. They're not cheap.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know. But remember, you're buying these commodity routers, these Linksys routers for $40. And they're not great. I've used Netgear a lot, D-Link a lot, like them. Buffalo makes some good stuff. But I always buy Apple because I figure I'm going to have it for 3 years. It costs $100 more. But spread out over those 3 years, that's not so much.
But in my mind, the way it's been with the way it's set up now, it's been working forever. Why do I have to do this at all? Are you saying it's just because the Verizon hardware is
cheap, junky hardware, but
the Wi-Fi works fine.
Wait a minute. I thought you said the Wi-Fi didn't work.
No, the Wi-Fi works fine on everything. I have to have the Ethernet work.
Ah, interesting.
The cable, the Ethernet cable is not working.
Oh, that's another matter entirely. Because if it doesn't work, then you're not going to be able to hook up another router to it. I thought it was the Wi-Fi that was problematic. Gosh, I think Verizon really needs to fix this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I misunderstood. Hold on a second. Don't go away. I misunderstood. So what you're saying is that you can use it as a Wi-Fi router, but you can't use it as a hardwired router.
Exactly. Yeah, you had it backwards, and I'm sitting there writing notes going,
but that's bizarre. That's bizarre.
Yes,
so
it is.
It's got to be, and they put a new unit in. I presume you've tried different cables.
I'm just using a modem. I don't have a router at all, and I don't have.
Well, you do have a router. You do.
Right. Okay. But
it has to be a router in order to let you use multiple computers. So that's what they do. They have modem routers.
Okay.
So that's and you definitely need the modem because you can't just understand what's. Is it a DSL or a fiber product from Verizon? Is it Fios or
it's DSL?
DSL. So you need a DSL modem.
Yes.
I would ask Verizon, can I buy my own? Because then what you can do, and sometimes I've done this with other companies before. They say, yeah, but you know, because you're paying a rental fee for that crap.
Yeah, I am.
So one thing to do is say, first of all, they've got to fix it. You're paying $5 or $7 a month for it. They got to fix it. It sounds like that's weird. So you got a new one, and the Ethernet didn't work again.
No, and I tried three different computers. I took a brand new laptop.
But the Wi-Fi works fine, and you're getting the Internet and everything.
Yep. And it worked fine on the old modem, too. It worked fine on the old modem also, and now I go, okay, let's put in a new modem router, and same problem. I tried different Ethernet cables, of course.
Right, so
I've done all that.
Here's the thing. You have to use a modem to interpret the DSL. It used to be we could plug directly into DSL, but those days are long gone. You need a modem, and that should come from Verizon. But Verizon is legally obligated to let you buy your own gear. So one thing you could do is get your own DSL modem. I think Verizon should keep replacing it until it works. I mean, it just needs to work.
Yeah, well, we're kind of fighting with the guy a little bit. I wouldn't say fighting, but...
Well, he got it working. That's the worst thing. Right. Yeah, he got it working.
So I say we just fight with Verizon for a while, and if it pushes...
You've tried it with different, not only different cables, but different computers, right?
Three.
Okay. So it's not the cable, it's not the computer.
Right.
It's got to be the Verizon router. Now, that's a router, by the way. When you plug Ethernet into that, well, it may not be. Okay, actually, that's interesting. So you have Wi-Fi on it, though. It has an antenna. It does Wi-Fi.
Yeah, it's coming through.
And is there only one Ethernet port you could connect to?
There's the one that works. No, there's two others.
Okay, and you've tried all of them.
Well, I haven't. I've only tried two of the three.
Okay.
I guess we could try that.
Try the third one.
Okay.
I'm wondering, there's an uplink cable and there's a WAN cable. Or LAN cable. You want to use the LAN port, not the uplink port.
Right, LAN, not uplink.
Yeah. Boy, this is a puzzling thing because the router is working. Otherwise, Wi-Fi wouldn't work.
Yeah, it really is strange, and it's worked for years. And all of a sudden, now I can't get the Ethernet cable to work, and that's why I called you. I'm like, this is beyond my pay grade.
And do you see the link light go on the modem when you're connected?
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. What
There's a little light, a little green light.
Yeah.
Usually it's next to the Ethernet port, but it might be on the front. It's the link light.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Those lights are the link in the back of the computer lights up and the link on the, we'll call it the modem lights up.
Okay,
yeah.
So you're getting a link. Well, wow, that's really weird. That means the hardware layer is working. You're getting a link light.
Right. Yeah, that's what I keep thinking. I keep thinking it's Verizon's, whatever's coming into this thing is the problem.
What? He's tried different cables.
Yes. I definitely did that.
And you've tried different machines. You know, the machine is set not with a static IP address, but set with DHCP. I'm sure the installer looked at that.
Yep.
Did he try it with his laptop?
Nope, he did not. But he got it working, though, remember?
Bizarre. Hey, I got to run. Maybe somebody will help us on the chat room. That's a bizarre one. Well, now we have a real mystery. I spent a little more time talking to Richard about his Verizon modem. I had misunderstood. His Wi-Fi works fine on his Verizon modem / router. Everything's working fine. But when he plugs a computer in via Ethernet cable, hardwired, he gets the green link lights on both ends. That usually means it's working. He's just not getting internet. I don't know what's wrong. That's a tough one. That's a tough one. In fact, the installer came out yesterday, got it working, and now it doesn't work again. I don't know what's going on. It's a ghost. You want to go in those settings and make sure everything's turned on. I can't. You tried different computers and different cables, so it's really interesting. Something's going on, but I don't know what. Maybe if I could walk in the door and look at it. Sean is in Dana Point, California. Hi, Sean. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How you doing today?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, good. Okay, bear with me because I'm not too techy, but I recently purchased a new underwater video camera.
Oh, fun.
It's designed for fishing. It's called a Water Wolf underwater camera. It just came out. The reason I bought it was so I could, while I'm out on my boat, download the video right away and sort of get almost a live feed of what's going on below the boat.
Oh, neat. So you let the camera down underneath the boat and you look around. It's a live feed?
Well, no, it's not a live feed. It goes onto a micro SD card.
So you pull it up and then you put it in your laptop.
Here's the problem. And it's actually designed to go on your fishing rod. So when you throw your lure out or troll it, you can actually watch the fish hit the lure.
Wow.
It's sort of a neat concept. Problem is it records in a .mov.
Right.
Okay. What I want to do is I want to have my iPad, though, on the boat, not my laptop. And be able to download it straight to my iPad.
Well, the good news is the MOV format is compatible with the iPad. That's a QuickTime format.
Oh, because you need
the camera connection kit.
Okay, I did. You know, I have the SD card
reader
kit. Reader.
Yeah.
When I plug it in to my iPad, it says this operation cannot be completed.
Oh, yeah. An iPad really isn't designed to do anything useful.
Yeah, I know.
It's designed,
throw it in my backpack and I can.
Yeah. No, I don't blame you. I don't blame you.
I know I can download it onto my PC.
Yeah.
And convert it to an MP4 and then redo all that. But I'm trying to find a way to download it straight.
I'm watching the YouTube video for the Water Wolf. That is so cool.
Yeah.
That's better than the Bass Hunters or whatever. This is cool.
Yeah, exactly.
You can make your own TV.
Yes.
And
I know there. Somebody told me there is a way to convert it while on the iPad, but I just
the issue is getting it to the iPad. And yeah. It's funny because that's a format the iPad should understand, although it may be a non-standard MOV. So it's a little weird the way video works. There's the wrapper, but inside the wrapper there's video that's compressed, and it can be different formats within the wrapper. So the wrapper MOV only tells us that it's a QuickTime wrapper, as opposed to AVI, which is the Windows Video Wrapper, or Matroska MKV, and the various wrappers. But inside, it may be that video is not compressed with something that the iPad understands. The iPad's fairly limited.
Okay.
So you went and you got the Apple Camera Connection Kit, right?
Yes.
You didn't buy some third party. This is an Apple brand.
No, this is an Apple.
Is it a 30-pin or a Lightning connector?
It's a Lightning.
Okay. So it plugs into the Lightning connector, and it's got an SD slot. You take it out of the camera, you plug it in, and the iPad goes, huh?
Yeah, this operation cannot be completed.
And
it downloads, when you go to the camera roll, it has something that's been downloaded.
Ah.
It's just a white... it's just a white, screen with a little...
It might be if you got a different program for the iPad. It might be able to read it. The program that reads the most things is VLC.
Okay.
And Apple banned it for a while, but I believe it's back.
Okay.
So try downloading VLC from the App Store. And then launch VLC and then plug in the SD card and see if that works. The problem is that the iPad, it's no user serviceable parts inside kind of thing.
Yeah,
right?
I know. Really limited
on what you can do. And it's funny that Apple didn't really want people to use VLC because one of the things VLC does is let you look at other video formats. And Apple didn't like that. But for some reason, they got wise, or maybe the Department of Justice got a hold of them, but they let it back on the App Store.
Okay, I'll try that. I know I have VLC on my PC, and that's...
Yeah, well, you're familiar with it then. Yeah, it's the ultimate... Yeah. It's kind of like the ultimate Swiss Army knife for video.
Yeah.
It'll read anything.
Okay. So open it first, and then plug in the SD card reader.
Yeah. The other thing you could do is there are wireless SD card readers. There are, Wi-Fi. There are Wi-Fi hard drives that have SD card readers. There are intermediate ways that you could get it into the iPad.
Oh, okay. So yeah, I've never heard of...
Seagate and a couple other companies make hard drives that have Wi-Fi. They're like little Wi-Fi access points, but the iPad can see them and see the video on there. And if you could get the video into it, and some of them I think may have SD card readers, and you get the video into that, then you could see it on the iPad.
Okay. All right. Well, I will try that then.
All right. Thanks for the call. They're telling me Apple did not ban them. VLC banned themselves because there were license issues. I'm not surprised. VLC can do all sorts of things that are probably quasi-illegal, like open DVDs, things like that. So apparently they had to fix the license, but they got it back on the Apple Store. So that's good. The issue really is he doesn't want to bring a computer with him. He just wants to bring that lightweight little Apple iPad. But iPads are funny things. They do what they do and not much else. And they don't do everything a computer does, obviously. This is a cool little thing. There's a YouTube video on this if you want to see the water wolf in action. You put it on your fishing rod and you can watch the poor fish get hooked. Or get eaten by another bigger fish, it looks like. 8888 Ask Leo. Evan Dunn in our chat room. Our producer Jason says there's a program for the computer called Walt R that will convert and upload video files to your iOS devices. That's not going to solve the problem, though. He doesn't want to bring the computer on the boat. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. I think Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, I think if he's back from his journeys, will join us right after this. Stay right here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Jason's on the line from Newport Beach, California. Hi, Jason.
Well, good afternoon to you, and thank you so much for taking my call. It's my first time. My compliment to your associate.
Thank you.
She made a comment that I should make it brief. I apologize. It's my first time, once again. I would like to ask you to help me out with this AT&T that I'm not really happy, and I would like to go someplace else. I have a landline, which I use it for international and certain calls, and this thing that they've given me, Uverse, rather than fixing it, it is, well, they never told me, that they have connected, they've replaced my wall unit of the landline.
Yeah.
They've connected to Uverse. I apologize. I'm a little bit confused how much I should really make it brief because she is nice, wonderful. But,
yeah. But you understand she's just a harsh taskmaster. You take all the time
wonderful.
You want.
She's wonderful. I just, I really am embarrassed to take your time.
No, don't be embarrassed.
I am.
You're worse than Steve Martin. He apologized for taking my time too, you know.
Well, it shouldn't, because if everybody did what everybody was supposed to do,
let me tell you.
Wonderful.
Do you remember Lily Tomlin on Laugh-In?
Yes.
And she would say, "We don't care. We don't have to. We're the phone company," right? Well, they're still the phone company. They're not a monopoly really anymore, but they're still acting like they own the whole thing.
Mr. Laporte, they had disconnected my phone.
I know.
I have never been delinquent in my life.
No.
They hadn't told me. No, I didn't know.
I know, and Verizon will do the same thing. If you order Fios, they'll disconnect the copper. They all want to get out of the business of copper. Now, let me tell you why your copper phone is the best way to go. It works in an emergency. It works when the power is out, because power comes from the phone company's central office, not from the grid. And I think everyone should have a landline phone with your local phone company.
Connected to the wall.
Connected to the wall. Well, yeah, or not. But, coming out of the wall. So,
I didn't ask them.
But they don't know. But see, but I, you know, they don't like the copper. They don't want the copper. It costs some money to maintain the copper. What they want is everything to be internet now. But
sure.
There's disadvantages. And, in fact, the FCC is looking into this, because one of the disadvantages is emergencies. 911 will stop working when the power goes out. They put a battery in your garage, but the battery doesn't work forever, and they don't ever check it. I had a Comcast put a triple play battery in my garage and didn't check it for 5 years. I know that lithium ion battery stopped working, but they don't care.
I didn't know. I didn't ask for Uverse. I asked them why I used the neighbor's phone, because nothing was working. I used neighbor's phone and said, "What is wrong with me?" They said, "It's been suspended. For what reason?" And on the record, honest.
Well, I don't, I'll be honest with you. I can't really help you. This is a call to AT&T, a letter to the Public Utilities Commission, a complaint to the PUC. You're in California. The PUC has a obligation. Actually, in most states, there's a public utilities commission as an obligation to look into these things. And they're messing with you. They don't want you to be on a copper line. They want you to be on, in this case, U-verse. If you order Fios and Verizon comes and puts it in, they'll often clip the copper without telling you. So that there's no going back. They'll just cut it. No, you don't need that anymore. We're just going to take that out. Because they never want you to go back. I think you go back to AT&T and say, I want to go back to my copper line. And I think you also have to complain to the PUC. But there's not something I can help you with because I'm just some guy on the radio. You need people with more powers than I have. You could call the city franchise authority in Newport Beach. They're the ones who gave AT&T permission, gave them a monopoly in your area, right? There's no other phone company. This is the same problem we have really with internet companies. They don't have any competition. We don't care. We don't have to. We're the phone company. Without competition, they're going to get arrogant. They're going to get complacent. And they're going to bend the rules. See, they're supposed to ask you. They really are. And you are allowed to say, do not cut the copper. I want the copper. I want POTS. It's called plain old telephone service. I want POTS. You call them up. You're a nice fella. Call AT&T first. Say, I want my POTS back. And if you don't put it back, I'm calling the PUC and the city franchise authority. And they ought to react. And if they don't, then you're going to have to go in there and ruffle some feathers. That's a shame. And if you do order one of these new triple play bundle things or, you know, phone plus internet, be very careful. And I would be very clear when the installer's there, do not disconnect the POTS line. I want to have a POTS line. And you do want to have a POTS line for emergency. My mom, 83 years old, lives back east, terrible snowstorms. I said, Mom, you have to have, go down to the Radio Shack, get a plain, one of those old phones. It could be a princess phone, but not that plugs into the power, that just plugs into the wall. That's it. That's what you need because that will work even when the power is out. It will work in emergencies, and that's what you need. Otherwise, you're relying on a battery they put in the garage and never check again. And I don't think that's bad. They are required to give you service. That's their franchise. That's their mandate from the local government and from the PUC. They're required to do that. So you call them and say, I want my POTS back. I want my POTS. And I wish you luck because you're dealing, you know, look at Comcast, Verizon, AT&T. They're all the same. The worst. Arnie in Atlanta, Georgia, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Arnie.
Hey, Leo. Nice to hear from you. I am a longtime listener and first time caller.
Thank you.
I saw a recommendation that you and Russell Tammany made about the A7 and the A7.
Yes. We're kind of camera geeks.
Cameras.
He's a better photographer than I am, but we both love our Sony A7 cameras.
Yes. I do own an NEX7, and I wanted to get into the full frame.
Yeah, there you go.
Revolution.
How do you like the NEX? It's great, isn't it?
NEX7 is great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fantastic. I have a lot of lenses, and you know, I have a Zeiss lens. It's an excellent camera.
Yes, yeah.
And you know, I wanted to keep it, but I also want to get into the full frame camera. You know, because of the light,
right.
The low light. But anyway, I was just about to buy an A7S,
which is my favorite camera right now. Love it.
Exactly.
But they did announce the A7 Mark II.
Camera.
Yeah.
Exactly. The Mark II just announced, and B&H actually has a wish list that you can sign up for, and they'll give you an email when it comes in, a notification. The question is this. They claim that it has image stabilization.
Five-way. Five-axis.
Image stabilization gives you 4.5 f-stops.
Right.
Better in low light.
Right. I haven't tried it yet. I'm going to get on that B&H list, too. I don't know when it'll be available. Sony just announced this. And the idea is, now, we already have image stabilization in our A7s. You do in your NEX, I think.
Right, in the lens.
In the lens. And so what Sony's saying is this is better because it's in the body, and it will work with your in-the-lens stabilization. You know what? Right now, it's just ad copy. So I'll get one when it comes out, and I'll let you know, Arnie. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Do you need some money? I got somebody who wants to lend you some money. How about if you could get $35,000 in the next, I don't know, 5 days? Be a good thing, right? So that's why Prosper is here. Prosper is this really cool. It's Silicon Valley's answer to the bank loan. They're what we call a peer-to-peer lender. They're not a lender themselves. They bring people who have money to lend with people who want to borrow. The nice thing is you don't have to put on a tie. You don't have to put on pants. You don't have to go to the bank at all. You can do it all from your screen. Go to prosper.com, and you can actually fill out a form. You don't have to give them a lot of personal information, just some basic stuff. And they'll give you a rate and how much you can borrow based on your credit. It will not affect your credit score. You can get this information without affecting your good credit. And then you can decide. I got to tell you, this is a great way to borrow. You pay off those high-rate credit cards or fix up your house for the holidays, maybe start a business. Prosper's online marketplace is kind of a friction-free way to combine people who need money with those who want money to lend, who have money to lend. Don't put more debt on your credit cards this holiday season. Pay them off with Prosper. Check out your low rate right now, prosper.com/twit. Prosper.com/twit. And get up to $35,000 in just 5 days with a $50 Visa prepaid card, kind of our gift to you when you get that loan. Prosper.com/twit. The $50 Visa prepaid card is yours along with the loan. Prosper.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support. Frankie the Waffle says, all this time I've been wearing pants. Well, you don't have to. Only wear pants when you go to the bank, but you don't need to go to the bank. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Yeah, image stabilization makes a big difference in cameras. We see them now. We're starting to see them even in smartphones. The iPhone 6 Plus has what they call OIS, optical image stabilization. It's hard to believe it works because it's essentially the lens is on like little springs inside the camera or the sensor. Some part, I guess, it must be the sensor, right? And the camera senses movement and moves the sensor in sympathy. Maybe it's the whole camera. Moves it in sympathy to the movement to compensate so that what looks would be shaky is steady. I don't know how you do it in a phone. A number of the newer phones do have OIS. The advantage you get from OIS is you can take pictures with a slower shutter speed. So normally, if your camera's moving around or the subject's moving around, if you're taking pictures of race cars or you're jiggling around, you turn the shutter speed up to 1/500th of a second or 1/1000th of a second, and that'll freeze anything. It'll freeze your motion. It'll freeze the motion of the race car because it's such a small slice of time, you don't have to worry about shake. The problem is when you get in darker environments, when you're in low light situations, you can't turn the shutter speed so high because not enough light's let in. And so when they talk about, oh, this is going to give you five more stops, what they're really saying is because the stabilization compensates for shaky hands or the fact that you're using a telephoto lens and, you know, even the slightest movement is magnified by the very long lens, you can take pictures in lower light than you would normally because the stabilization keeps that hand steady, in effect. So it doesn't really have more capability in terms of low light. It merely means that your shaky hand or the shaky car, the shaky bus is going to be compensated for, so you don't have to set it to a higher shutter speed. You could stay with a lower shutter speed suitable for low light situations. Does that make sense? It's a good thing to have. It's hard to believe it works. It's you know, kind of magnets, and it's something that it looks like Leonardo da Vinci might have invented this in one of his notebooks. You know, one of these crazy Rube Goldberg things. But it does seem to work. And if you look at the videos that Sony is publishing now of the A7 Mark II in action, it's quite impressive. This one has probably more aggressive image stabilization than any camera on the market. They call it five-way. You've got pitch, yaw, roll. And if you have image stabilization in the shutter, it will use that as well. It'll work together electronically. But I can't tell you how well it works yet because no one has one. The good news on this is that the A7 cameras have been fairly expensive, almost $3,000, as I remember, for the A7R. Sony says the list price for the body will only be $1,600. So it will be more affordable, a lot more affordable than previous versions. Don't know when it's going to be out. 24.3 megapixels. It's as often is the case with new cameras. They've improved the software and, you know, it's got better focusing, faster and all that. But the thing that the photographers will be very interested in is this five-axis image stabilization. That's interesting, to say the least. Don't know if I would rush out to get it. I would probably wait until the reviews come out. An interesting thing happens with camera reviews is that Sony, Canon, Nikon, the camera companies usually provide reviewers and, more importantly, enthusiasts and professional photographers with the gear long before it makes it to the market. So there will be, you will absolutely be able to decide whether to buy it before it becomes available. People like DP Review, Luminous Landscape, some of the big photographic sites usually have access to these early on. My friend Trey Ratcliffe, who is a wonderful landscape photographer, his website, stuckincustoms.com, has completely converted to the A7 system from Sony. In fact, it was his decision to do that that convinced me. He was a Nikon shooter for as long as I've known him. And when he said, nope, I'm going to shoot with the A7R and then the A7S, and his images are stunning, I said, all right, it's good enough for Trey Ratcliffe, it's good enough for me. 8888 Ask Leo. I love, as you know, talking about photography. Don't mind doing that at all. Let's move on to Jim in Santa Clarita, California, our next caller. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm well, how are you?
I'm good. A little frustrated with my Samsung Galaxy 10.1.
No, the tablet.
The tablet.
Yep.
I've had it for a long time. I've used it for almost 2 years now. Nothing has been a problem. But now the Google Play Store won't allow me to sign in to update my applications. It won't let me go to Gmail. Won't let me go to any of those things. It just says that I entered the wrong password. My account has changed.
That doesn't sound like it's the tablet's fault. Have you tried logging into your Google account on a computer?
Yes.
And it works?
I have another tablet sitting right here. It works fine on. My computers work fine. Everything else works fine on using the same password.
That's odd.
I tried changing the password, but this won't let me get out of this one little spot where it's, when I try to log in, it just says you've entered the wrong password.
Hmm.
And then when I try to type in, I've changed it a couple of times to see that maybe I'm typing it wrong.
Yeah.
And it won't allow me.
That is a weird problem. I mean, a factory reset would probably fix it, but you may not want to.
Well, I don't want to do factory reset on the tablet, but I tried to delete it, my Gmail account, and it won't let me do that.
It sounds like there's an issue maybe with the keyboard. Are you using the Google, or rather the Samsung keyboard, or have you used a third-party keyboard? You're using
the keyboard that's on the
original keyboard, and you're not using a password program like LastPass or something like that?
No.
You've turned off the tablet and turned it back on? I mean, all the way off, not just turned the screen off, but shut it down?
Yeah, I do that every day anyway.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I think, unfortunately, that a reset is probably the only thing that's going to fix it at this point. Now, that means you'll have to re-download all your stuff. It's not a bad idea to do that once in a while. It's been 2 years. I don't know why that's happening. If it's not, the keyboard is doing something weird. But if you're using the Samsung keyboard, I don't think it's that. I presume that you're updating it as well. you know, you're getting the updates from Samsung. That probably, if it shipped 2 years ago, is it Kit Kat? It's probably Jelly Bean. You might see if you can get a later version of the operating system. That's an odd thing, and I'm not sure what's going on. I'm pretty sure, though, that a system restore will do it. And, of course, on Android, that's just you go to the backup and I think it's called backup and restore in the settings, and you reset the machine. That should do it. Almost always fixes a multitude of woes. Michelle in Thousand Oaks. Hello, Michelle. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Long time listener. In fact, every weekend I have to say that little wedge of time.
That's what I like to hear. We own you on the weekend.
Well, it's a lot easier. Anyway, my problem is not only do I use Carbonite, but they don't download or they don't take your apps you've purchased, etc. So I use an external hard drive.
Yeah, and the reason is you generally end with backup, especially if it's online backup, because it's, you know, you're using online bandwidth. You don't want to back up anything that you have another copy of. The idea is to back up the stuff that you made that's unique, that's your documents. So the operating system and the applications, most backup systems don't. However, if you want to back them up, you can. Not with Carbonite. I wouldn't do it with Carbonite. The problem is backing up an application isn't going to let you restore it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because you're not backing up everything. So applications, especially on Windows, when an application is installed, it puts stuff in the registry, it puts stuff in different directories, it adds DLLs, more than just that application folder, right? So even if you back up the if you just back up the EXE or you back up the whole application folder, it's still not going to run if you restore Windows. What you have to do is back up an image of the whole system. If you want to back up your applications, you need to back up more than just the applications. You need to back up the whole darn hard drive. And that's what image backups are for. And this is a great thing to do. I think image backup is a very nice thing to have. I do image backups when I first get a computer. I want to back it up the way it was. As soon as I've installed all the apps, got all the updates in there, I make another image. There are a variety of programs. We'll put some of them in the show notes at techguylabs.com. Norton Ghost was the original of these, and that's a very useful thing, but it's not separate from Carbonite. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, all that jazz. Yeah, anything with a chip in it. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the number, 888-888. 827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can also call us via Skype if you're outside those areas. 8888-ASK-LEO. We are talking high tech. And I guess I've picked up a line. I didn't even know it. Michelle in the Thousand Oaks. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Michelle.
Hi. I sort of started to ask you a question and got off. Or you got off on a tangent about apps being backed up.
Oh, you and me both. Yes. Okay. So, good. Well, so that wasn't your question, but that is, by the way, an issue. So what's your question?
My question is, I use an external hard drive. I use a Mac, and I have Carbonite.
Okay.
The reason I have the external hard drive is you need a third one. My question really is, say I back up weekly, and then 6 months, a year from now, are the documents that I had in there that I backed up from, say, my 2012 taxes, are they still in that backup?
Well, of course. Where would they go?
Well, how much?
Well, okay. Now, on Carbonite, that might be different. So let me explain what Carbonite does. If you delete the copy on your local drive, I think it's 3 months later, Carbonite will delete it on the backup. They don't want the backup to balloon out of proportion, and so they will. Now, if the copy on your local hard drive will not be affected by deleting it, as long as the copy you're making is not a full synchronization. If it's just a backup, if it's a synchronization, then it will delete it because it's trying to keep the external drive the same as your internal drive. So, but generally, backups don't get deleted. Did you lose something?
No, I my question would be, if I went back into, like, I have a terabyte Libc, and I use some of it for my MacBook Air that I use for photography being on another different hard drive, I still back it up, and I just want to know how long. They don't use the whole space up and say, well, now you got to go out and buy a new hard drive.
Well, right. That's right. So exactly right. You can have more stuff on your backup than you have locally because it keeps everything. But if generally you want to get a backup drive, an external drive that's bigger than your internal drive.
Well, I think a terabyte is bigger than my iMac.
Yeah. So yeah. If it's twice as big as your iMac, then it'll last a long time. And then when it does fill up, get another one that's bigger. Put that one aside. Now you have a copy that's in, cold storage.
Well, then I must have misunderstood because I thought that, they don't necessarily duplicate, but I thought they removed once they were full to X point.
Well, it depends. Are you using Time Machine?
I use Time Machine, and then I use the external hard drive.
Yeah.
Time Machine recognizes the disk.
Yeah, so Time Machine does, after a while, get rid of old stuff. I think. Okay. I think it might. But only, okay. So let's say you're working on your resume and you update your resume. It'll keep the previous version and the new version. And it'll keep a number of versions up to a point where it starts to fill up the drive. Then it will delete the older versions. If it's your 2013 taxes and that has a unique name, it's never going to replace that.
Okay.
So the first one's called versioning, where it will keep multiple versions of the same document up to the point where it starts to run out of space. And so after 8 or 9 copies, you might not be able to go complete. That's that whole back in time thing that Time Machine's doing. Ooh, where it does the stars rush by and you're going back to your previous versions of a document. But if you've got a new document and you didn't touch the old document, that should last forever. But this is why you want multiple copies, right? And if you're confused about it, then this is why I don't actually recommend Time Machine, because I don't like stuff that you don't know what it's doing. So what I would recommend instead is a simple synchronization program. Second copy is, on the Mac, Super Duper. Second copy is for Windows. Super Duper on the Mac. Excellent program. You have it run on schedule every day, twice a day if you're very, active. And it will look at your external drive. It'll look at your internal drive and make sure that everything that's on the internal drive is on the external drive, except it never, and this is that synchronization thing, it never erases anything on the external drive, the external drive, unless you tell it to. So everything you've ever had will be there. Now, here's what I like to do. You got Carbonite. That's nice. That's great. That's offsite backup. Remember, you've been listening. You have 3 copies of everything, the original, the external drive, and Carbonite. That's perfect. If you wanted to be really, extra boot and suspenders, belt and suspenders. I don't know what the boots are. Extra belt and suspenders. Get another external drive and swap those periodically. Bring one to work. Now you've got copies all over the place. All over the place. And that's a nice thing to have. So, yeah, Michelle, to answer your question, Time Machines sometimes will delete older versions of files. It should never delete the only version of a file. But I don't like Time Machine because I'm not sure what it's doing, so I always use Super Duper instead. Jim in Hollywood, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Leo. This is I had one of the original old Intel Macs, and one day when I was using it, there was a loud pop sound like a light bulb exploding and the screen went black. So now I'm thinking of buying a refurbished 27-inch. And I was wondering what the difference is between the i5 and the i7.
Ah, good question. Yeah, and incidentally, that's probably your monitor that popped. And you probably could just get an external monitor and it would all work fine.
I had a cinema display right beside it and everything went.
Everything went out.
Everything went.
Maybe it was a power supply or capacitor on the motherboard or something. So I'll answer your question, though. Again, with the tangents, Leo, knock it off with the tangents. The difference between the i5 and the i7 is about $300. No.
No, I don't mean price. I
know. I'm just teasing you. The biggest difference is the i5. They're really very similar. The i5 and the i7. The i7 does multi-threading. So you'll see that they have usually 4 cores. There's four processors on that chip. Right. What's been amazing is that as we've gotten better and better at making these chips, the die size, the size of the wires actually on the chips has gotten much, much smaller. So the fabs are now at 0.2 nanometers, 0.9 nanometers. They're really tiny. And as you get tinier circuitry, that means you can pack more on the same die. The die is the chip itself. So without getting the chips bigger, we have more capacity. So what Intel has been doing is instead of, they're saying, well, we got so much room, we could actually put four chips on a die, four cores. So the number of cores is generally the same on an i5 and an i7. The i7, they have something called multi-threading, which means each core can do two things at once. So you might have a dual-core i5 and a dual-core i7, but the dual-core i7 could do four things at a time.
Oh, I see.
It doesn't make a very big difference.
And also, is it worth the money to get the Fusion Drive instead of the regular?
I wouldn't recommend a Fusion Drive. This is Apple's kind of interesting, unique technology where they have a smart SSD and a spinning drive, and the software thinks it's one drive. And then Apple's software will move the stuff you use a lot onto the solid-state drive because that's faster. And I have a Fusion Drive in my iMac, and I don't think it's quite as good as an SSD by itself. So one of the things you could do is you could break up the solid-state and the spinning drive and say, look, I'm going to put my – what I like to do is have my operating system and my applications on the solid-state drive where that's the fastest, and then I keep my data on a spinning drive. In other words, I do it myself. I feel like that's going to give you more bang for your buck than the Fusion Drive. Fusion also adds other issues like Windows compatibility. I'm not crazy about it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So you got to go to Intel, and it's good luck trying to compare processors. But I've pulled up two as an example. And we'll, you know, I'll put these both in the show notes so you can look. I've pulled up the 4670 processor that came out the end of last year, or spring of last year, I guess. And the i7-4770 processor came out at the same time, almost identical processors. And one thing you should understand is the thing the processors do, the instruction set, the calculations, the SSE instructions, all of that is identical. The only difference in the i5 and the i7, the i5 has a little bit less L2 cache. That can make a difference in performance, but that's mostly because the i5 doesn't have hyper-threading. It can only do, in this case, four things at a time. The i7 can do seven. And the i7 can go up a little faster, 3.9 gigahertz compared to 3.8, just a little bit faster. Probably, I'm going to guess, probably these are identical chips. And the way they make chips is kind of interesting. They do something called bin sorting. So they'll make the chips, you know, come on a silicon wafer. It's a giant circle of silicon that they then cut up into processors. And so all the chips on a single wafer, they'll cut them up and they'll test them. They'll say, how fast can this chip go reliably? And then they'll bin sort them. Well, this one could go 3.9, this one could go 3.8, this one could go 3.7. And there are differences, even within a wafer, of the capabilities of a chip. It might get a little hot when it goes 3.9 and it's less reliable. So they'll bin sort them. And then they'll sell the faster chips for more money. Same identical chip, really, electronically. But because of the way it was made, there are differences in performance and abilities. I think they also will do things like disable capabilities in chips. This is going to be an i5 wafer. We're going to disable something called hyper-threading that allows a single processor to do two things at once. You know, cut a line in effect. And now it's the same chip came on this. It's identical except that they just little bitty change there and now they could charge, you know, that one they could sell for less. They want to have a range of chips at a range of prices so that people can get computers at a range of prices. And it's about $100 less for the i5 for the manufacturer than the i7. So you can make a $200 or $300 less expensive computer. So Intel does this, and they do it consciously. They actually, of course, they could make all their chips be equally fast. They could make all their chips top of the line. But then they wouldn't have any low-end stuff. So they artificially limit the capabilities of various chips. And that's what's happened, I think, with the i5 and the i7. They're effectively the same. Capabilities exactly the same, except for a couple of little things here and there. Nothing to be – and in most cases, an i5 is all you need. There are only a few cases where the number of things a chip can do at once is important. Video compression, things like that. You know, if you're doing multi-threaded calculations, if you're launching rockets – you might want an i7. Most of us an i5 is just fine. And I do like the Intel chips, but it's interesting the games they play. Truthfully, if the bin sorts don't give you enough chips, you might say, I need more i5s, and all of these chips are testing out as i7s. Tell you what, let's take some of those i7s, just mark them i5, put them in that bin. That happens all the time. It happened years ago. We enthusiasts knew that the Celeron chips that Intel was selling were really much more capable than they were marked on the box. You could overclock them, run them at a higher speed than was marked on the box reliably. It's because in the bin sort, they didn't get enough of these cheap chips, so they just said, well, take some of those more expensive chips and mark them cheap. But the enthusiasts knew. And they said, great, you can get this chip. The word went out. You can get this chip, and you can run it. Just turn up the clock speed on your motherboard. You can run it faster, and it's reliable. Ah, those were the days. 8888 Ask Leo. They don't do that anymore. Mark in Amherst County, Virginia. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mark.
Hey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Moved back to the rural area of central Virginia up in the Blue Ridge, and we had gotten used to DSL speeds. Living in a more metropolitan area.
Yes.
I'm doing some online consulting work and, you know, different things for the business I was in for 30 years. Mm-hmm. I'm having to use a Verizon wireless router, like you were talking to the gentleman about earlier.
Right, right.
I can blow 40 gigs in an afternoon in a video conference.
Oh, boy.
Boy. Man, it's eating me alive.
I bet, because you're paying, are you paying overage or you pay for the bits? Or?
Oh, overage is 15 a gig.
Right. So you're using Verizon's cellular technology, a 4G modem.
They say it's 4G, but I don't know because it's roaming to somebody else's network, but it's Verizon's the only one.
Oh, no wonder it's expensive. Not only are you paying for the overages, but because you're roaming, you're probably paying roaming charges.
Exactly, and the Verizon keeps telling us, "Oh, we'll have FiOS back here." They've been saying that since 2001.
I can tell you right now,
copper pairs open back here.
They will never put FiOS out there. They've stopped growing the FiOS plant. AT&T says they're going to do the same thing too, and the reason is, I believe, they're mad at the FCC. And so, what these big companies do is they hold the American public ransom. AT&T said, FCC, if you implement these net neutrality, they said this out loud. If you implement these net neutrality policies, we're not going to build any more fiber. That's it. We're done. They blackmailed the American public and the FCC to give them what they want. And Verizon did the same thing. They said, we're going to put FiOS everywhere. They got some concessions, and then they said, oh, never mind. So they've stopped. They're not rolling out more FiOS. That's it. They're done.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're never getting FiOS out there. That was a lie.
Is there anything over-the-air satellite, maybe, that might be?
Well, you can look at WildBlue. They have a product called Exceed.
Mm-hmm.
Satellite generally is not is more expensive, is not as reliable. Remember, you've got to do an uplink to a thing way high in the air. So it also adds what we call latency. You've seen it, you know, when you watch a satellite call on CNN when the reporter's in Baghdad, and the CNN anchor says, Jim, what do you think? 2, 3, 4, 5.
Exactly.
That's called latency. It's the death of Skype calls, and that's what you get with a satellite because it has to go all the way up and all the way down.
Yeah.
So satellite's not great. If what you want to do is video conferencing, it's probably not a great choice. You don't have a lot of choices. You move to a beautiful area of the country. Enjoy the trees, because you're not ever going to get good internet out there.
That's what I was afraid of.
You know, that I tell you, this is a big issue. Rural areas, because the population's so thin, you know, one person per how many square miles, It's just not worth it for them to run cable or fiber out there. They can't make enough money.
They're not even repairing the copper they have back here. We've got 150 pair of cable running down the road, and 11 pairs are out.
Yeah, you're going to have a party line before too long. Hey, Maude, get off the phone. I need to call downtown. You're going to have a party line because there's no money in it. And the regulators, the federal government, has stopped regulating. The PUCs, the state regulators, they don't care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're just talking about this issue of internet service in the rural areas. And the reason that you're not going to get businesses to do this is it's just too darn expensive and the population is too darn thin. When you have one person for every square mile or 3 square miles or 5 square miles, it's just not profitable to dig trenches and bring cable or fiber out there. It's just not. And as our caller said, they're not even maintaining the existing copper. So the solution, you know, there's a couple of ways to go. Of course, I've pointed in the past to what the federal government did with rural electrification. Same problem. 100 years ago, when electricity started to come in, and the urban areas got wired right away, right? Because the population density was sufficient, this was a very profitable thing to do. But as soon as you get out in the country, well, nobody's going to bring electricity out to the country. So this happened under FDR, the rural electrification projects, like the Tennessee Valley Authority, federal government came in and put in electricity. It was deemed that electricity was a need, and it was something everybody needed, and it was worth investing that in that infrastructure for the country's good. And I would have to say, I think internet access is exactly the same thing. It should be a human right. It is absolutely a need. It's how nowadays, not just how we shop, it's how we learn, it's how we communicate. It is, I think, a big part of a well-informed electorate. So maybe that's one solution. I know it's not popular these days to spend tax money on anything. That might be a good thing to spend some tax money on, make some jobs too. We were able to do it in the 20s. The other option, of course, is wireless. And that's what satellite does. Intel's launching these balloons, these Project Loon balloons. Now, it's mostly intended not for the U.S., but for the third world, for developing areas where there's no infrastructure at all. These balloons fly high in the air above the stratosphere. They move around with the currents, the high-level currents. And Intel says now they can launch these balloons at an incredible rate and bring internet access from the air, much cheaper than a satellite. If you go to google.com/loon, aptly named, balloon-powered internet. There are also, you know, other wireless solutions like microwave, and there are, in fact, wireless internet service providers, or WISPs, in many areas of the country. There are solutions to this. There are technological solutions. There are political solutions to this. And I think it's important because I think just like electricity, we all need internet access no matter where we live. Having said that, I absolutely wouldn't consider living anywhere that didn't have high-speed internet access for an affordable price. That's just me. But it kind of is my business. But, boy, I need that. They launched the first balloon balloons in New Zealand. Very cool idea. These balloons are kind of like weather balloons. They travel almost in space, right on the edge of the atmosphere. They're twice as high as airplanes and well above the weather, so that's how they can stay up there. And stratospheric winds move in a variety of directions, apparently. So they can use radio controllers to control the location of the balloons by moving them from one area of the stratosphere to the other and using the winds to push them in the direction they want them to go. If they launch enough of them, and apparently they're getting very good at launching them, believe it or not, this kooky project could be a way of providing internet for a lot of people. Google says they can now launch 20 balloons a day. They got the technology down. Loon balloons have traveled a total of 3 million kilometers since they first launched last year. They're using I guess they're helium balloons. They say they're using autofill equipment developed to fill balloons with the air equivalent of 7,000 party balloons in less than 5 minutes. That's how they get 20 up a day. They're also better than they used to be. They now last 10 times longer in the stratosphere. This is crazy, isn't it? But, you know, if you're somebody stuck in the Appalachians or in the Sudan and you can't get internet access, maybe a loon balloon will be the solution for you. It's crazy. Jesus on the line from Burbank. Hi, is it Jesus or Jesus? How do you prefer?
Jesus.
Hello, Jesus.
Hi, Leo. I just want to tell you, you have a great show. I love listening to you. I listened to This Week in Tech also.
Thank you.
Fantastic, the information you give out free, which is great.
Well, it's free to you, but I thank our great sponsors for making it possible.
Yes. I had a question, though. You got me really excited about the Moto X, especially the Moto Maker thing. And unfortunately, Sprint does not carry it anymore. They carry the first gen, but now not the second gen. And what's the reason for that? I know that there's something called CDMA or GSM. And I guess I'm just trying to understand before I, you know.
There's an interesting thing going on that may work in your area, may not. You might have to do some investigation, maybe go to an independent cell phone store. You know, there's the Sprint company stores, but then there's these other guys like Parrot that they sell everyone. And here's what I'm starting to see, and I'm seeing this on the internet. People are buying Moto X's unlocked. You know, they call it Pure Edition at Google. They're not tied to any carrier. And then putting Sprint LTE SIM cards in them, and they're working.
Really?
Well, and this is what's happening, is that all of the carriers, Verizon and Sprint included, are moving away from GSM and CDMA and are moving towards voice over LTE. LTE, as you know, is the data layer of their cell phone service. But the truth is, if you think about it, data is perfectly good for voice calls. We use it all the time with Skype and other things. So all of these companies are moving to VoLTE, voice over LTE. And if you're in a VoLTE area, I made up that that's how it's pronounced. I don't know. If you're in a VoLTE area, you might be able to use an unlocked phone of any kind in your region if you get a Sprint SIM.
How do I find out if I'm in a VoLTE area? Is there a website?
You can ask Sprint. Yeah, you probably could find it on the Sprint site as well. Those, you know, coverage maps, I don't trust them. They're always over-optimistic. There's red everywhere. I can't use my phone, but it's red. So but you might ask. I think the great thing about that, though, means that eventually all phones will kind of be compatible with all services. And then you just need to get an unlocked phone. When I say locked, I mean carrier locked. When you buy a phone at AT&T and it's got the Death Star logo on the back, AT&T makes sure that it'll only work with an AT&T SIM. Once you've paid off the phone, AT&T says they'll unlock it. That means they'll remove the software restrictions that mean you can use any company's SIM. If you're traveling, you can also say, hey, I'm going to Europe. Can I please get this unlocked, et cetera, et cetera. But increasingly, you're seeing unlocked phones. These Moto X's, if you go to motomaker.com, you can get a Moto X that doesn't have any company attached to it. And I'm told by some, put a Sprint SIM in and it'll work just fine. Now, it has to have the right – there's a few things. It has to have – you have to have VoLTE in your area. It has to have the right radio frequencies for that. You'll have to do some homework to make sure before you do this. I'm not telling you to run out and buy it, Leonard, because it may not work. I'm sorry, not Leonard.
Oh, I understand. Jesus,
yeah.
I understand.
But do some research. At Burbank, you know, I guarantee you you've got VoLTE in that area. It's too populous an area not to. We have it here in beautiful downtown Petaluma. So I'm sure they got it in beautiful downtown Burbank. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up. Did you see, I think it's in the Sunday Times today, but it's been online for a couple of days, The Secret Life of Passwords. Did you see that, Heather? This is, I don't want you to tell me your password. But all of us have, I think, and the author of this article, Ian Urbina, in fact, we're going to talk to him after the radio show for a little bit. But he noticed that everybody has kind of a standard master password that they might use over and over again, less secure sites, that kind of thing. And it often has a deep-seated meaning, maybe your kid's birthday. Do you have a password like that, Heather? You don't have to tell me.
Yeah.
But sometimes he says it really has a deep meaning.
Oh, yeah. I've got one of those, too.
Yeah. And so this is a great article. You might want to read this. It's at New York Times, nytimes.com, The Secret Life of Passwords. We despise them, yet we imbue them with our hopes and dreams, our dearest memories, our deepest meanings. And what he did is he went around, he talked to people, and he, believe it or not, got them to reveal, in some cases, their passwords and the stories behind them. He starts off with the story, kind of a tragic story, of Howard Lutnick, who was the chief executive at Cantor Fitzgerald. You remember that was the large financial services firm that was wiped out in 9/11. The entire floor that they were on was hit by one of the planes, killed 658 employees. He was not there. He survived. But because those employees knew the passwords to the servers, to all the stuff, he had the unenviable job of calling everybody's family and saying, do you know if he had a password, what his passwords might be? What he found was nobody knew those passwords. But so he started asking about birthdays and dogs' names, and he found out very quickly that many of the passwords were Microsoft swooped in to help because they knew that Cantor Fitzgerald would be out of business if they couldn't get into these accounts. So Microsoft sent out experts, and they started doing brute force. But he was able to get some of the less secure passwords by knowing more about the people who made the passwords. He would ask, what's your wedding anniversary? Tell me again where he went for undergraduate. Did you guys have a dog? What's her name? You have kids? Can you give me their birth dates? He was able to get into most of those servers. And this story inspired Ian to start asking people about their passwords. He says they derive from anything: scripture, horoscopes, nicknames, lyrics, book passages. Like a tattoo on a private part of the body, they tend to be intimate, compact, and expressive. There was a former prisoner whose password includes what used to be his inmate identification number. He said, every time I type my password, it's a reminder not to go back. So I'm curious. We're going to talk to Ian after the show, but maybe we'll put a little segment or two on next week. I'm just curious to you, my listeners. Everybody's nodding. Yeah. I have one. I won't tell you because I don't want to give it away, but it's a variant. It goes way, way back to 1994, and I've used this since then for all sorts of accounts in a variety of different forms. You know, I've told you in the past to mix passwords in with other stuff, for instance, your childhood phone number, things like that, and I often do that. That makes it a little bit more secure. But this password that I use is a variation on something Soledad O'Brien told me. Remember we were talking earlier in the show about I was on a show for MSNBC called The Site, and the NBC executives hated me. So it as a form of ritual humiliation, they made me play a virtual character. While Soledad was sitting on the set in a coffee bar talking to a dot on the wall, literally a dot painted on the wall, I was in the back room wearing a weird rubber suit with dots all over it and acting a character that became a real-time animated character talking to Soledad, a barista named Dev Null. Well, Soledad once told me that her mother hated me. She called me a vile little puppet man. And this was such an unhappy period in my career that I remember that insult, and I still use that as the basis for a lot of my passwords. I realized not so long ago, maybe that's not a good thing to dwell on, but I think that a lot of us had passwords like that. Sometimes not always happy memories, but something that just we'll never forget. Anyway, wonderful article if you get a chance to read it in the New York Times. It's called The Secret Life of Passwords, and Ian talked to so many people, surprisingly, who are willing to tell their story. It's actually a dramatic, I don't want to spoil it for you. Read, some of the stories are very moving, touching. Some of them are very funny. Really interesting. What is your crazy password? What is the password you remember? it's a funny thing. All right, a few more minutes left in the show. Betty in Menifee, California. You're next. Hi, Betty.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Great. Thank you. I really enjoy your show, and I get to listen to it on the weekends. I'm really a neophyte on the computer. So.
Well, you keep listening. You won't be a neophyte for long.
Oh, great. I have a problem with it. We have an XP. It's probably about 4 years old or so. And we had WebRoot, and it was ready to re-up. So we just went to the store and got a disk, and we reinstalled it. And then what? When the next day when we went to turn it on, there's no icons or no bar at the top, so we can't do anything. And I called the store where we got it, and they said, oh, well, you'll have to bring it in. If we can fix it, it will be no charge. If not, it will be, you know, we'll tell you how much it is.
Wait a minute. They'll charge you if they can't fix it?
Right. Well, right.
That seems fair.
Right. If they can't fix it right away,
yeah.
They won't.
If it's easy. So wait a minute. Let me get this straight. Your machine was operating just fine. In fact, you had WebRoot on it already, right?
Right. But it says it's time to renew it.
It ran out. Now, by the way, usually you can just go online and renew it. But okay. You decided to go to the...
I don't like to buy stuff online. I guess I'm old-fashioned. So
okay.
I went and bought the disc, and we put it on. But the guy at the store said, well, you have to take off the other and reinstall this one. And a sibling tried to do that and couldn't do it. I guess it was too long. And
those darn siblings. You have a sibling infestation.
Right. Well, right.
What version of Windows are you using?
XP.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, it's pretty old.
Oh, help us now. All right, well, the problem with XP, more than it's old, is that Microsoft is no longer fixing it.
Right.
And there are already severe flaws in XP that could make you vulnerable. So, and WebRoot, no antivirus to protect you against those.
Oh, okay.
Okay, but you got WebRoot. That's good. At least that still works. Does it still work on XP?
Yeah.
You said so on the box, right?
Well, the guy said it would, so.
Well, the guy has not been very reliable so far, so.
True.
All right.
True.
So you didn't uninstall the old one, and you just installed the new one on top of it, right?
Right.
Yeah. We're out of time, but my suggestion is go into the program's control panel and uninstall everything you can find that says WebRoot, and then start over. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.